Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom on the show's 16th anniversary. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Today we're going to look back a bit at our first years and then look forward at what we're going to be discussing during our 17th year. This is the year we must all be truly involved in getting our nation back on track. Truth, most of you know I'm a man of faith. My mother was a German Jew, so I'm a Jew. My dad was an Irish Catholic, so I was raised Catholic. I fell away from church for a while and in the army came back as a non-denominational Protestant. As a Mideast war planner, I read the Quran. I respect people of all faiths. And I was horrified when I read about what's going on in Los Angeles, where I grew up. The LA Dodgers are promoting an anti-Christian hate group, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, where drag queens pole dance on a crucifix, dress as our Lord in drag, mock Christ's road to Calvary in a gay bar brawl, and much more. I stand against this group and the Dodgers for promoting them. This is hostile to the America that I fought to defend. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. Skip, since I'm in a pro-faith mood and you're involved in helping churches protect their members, aren't you?
Absolutely, Colonel. That's probably the fastest growing segment of Midwest Tactical Training is teaching churches and their safety teams how to handle all of this bias and almost like hatred against churches. You know, I teach them how to protect themselves and how to deal with these far left wacko groups that want to protest against them and possibly even come in and hurt them.
Yes, sir. I'm on my church's self-defense team. Okay, here's what we have for you today. In news and comment by the Colonel, I'm going to discuss at least some of the challenges that our nation will be having to deal with during the next year. Then, Marine vet Skip Coriel will contribute some Marine wisdom. Next, Ambassador John Bolton will join us. He was the first big-name guest on this show way back then, and we'll discuss national challenges then and now. Next, the then station manager of Wood Radio in my home city of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Phil Tower, will join Josh Breimeyer, co-founder and co-host, and he was then one of Phil's assistants. And the three of us will discuss the founding of Frontlines of Freedom. And then co-host Skip Coriel will interview me.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Please send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. And we'll start with the news. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, with a big assist from Ukrainian comrades, the body of an Idaho Special Forces vet was en route to our embassy in Kiev on Friday in time for Memorial Day. Nick Mamer was killed in the battled city of Bakhmut on May 15 or 16. After traveling to Europe, he was drawn to Ukraine when Russia invaded. He was performing humanitarian work and training defense forces when he was killed in the intense fighting. After his death, he was featured in a propaganda video posted by the Wagner Group, a mercenary group that works alongside the Russian military. The group handed over his remains after another American veteran operating in Ukraine says he helped broker a deal. Quote, "We're happy to have him coming back so soon," said Zach Fairborn, Nick's cousin. "We had just accepted that the process might take months, and then we were told that he was on his way to the embassy." Mamer, like other American vets, was attracted to the Ukrainian struggle to remain free against Russian President Putin's effort to stamp out the government in Kiev and take the country for his own. Mamer's work included training Ukraine's territorial defense forces, soldiers, and helping the people who elected to stay in Bakhmut regardless of the fighting. Overwhelmingly, older people with no place else to go or disabled or impoverished residents.
Rest in peace, Nick Mamer, and thank you to the vet who got him returned. He's a great man doing right things.
And the Navy SEAL training course is rife with overzealous and unchecked instructors, spotty medical care, and students who were so determined to pass that they would either lie to doctors or turn to doping, according to a newly released and highly critical Navy report. The report, commissioned in the wake of the death of Seaman Kyle Mullen, an aspiring SEAL who died in 2022 just after completing the course's notorious Hell Week, details a near-perfect storm of issues that included a degree of complacency and insufficient attentiveness to a wide range of important inputs met to keep the students safe. The Navy ordered the investigation into how the training course known as the Basic Underwater Demolition SEAL Course, or BUDS, came in the wake of comments by Mullen's mother and New York Times reporting that exposed some of the problems detailed in the report. A spokesman for Naval Special Warfare Command said that the investigation is being reviewed. However, it is too early to comment on any potential accountability actions at this time. The report itself points to the need for some Navy accountability for the problems in SEAL training, and it notes that Naval Special Warfare Command intended to take action, though that section of the document is redacted. In 2021, before Mullen and his fellow recruits of Class 352 began their training, leaders of Naval Special Warfare Command and the schoolhouse running BUDS were already dealing with one problem on their hands. Candidates were dropping out at a far greater rate than normal. While normally, about one in three candidates would drop during the first and toughest part of the training pipeline, between 2021 and 2022, that figure spiked to almost one in two.
SEAL training has always been very tough, and it has to be. But in those situations, leaders have to be very aware of how their troops are doing and take care of them. It's clear that the taking care of the troops part got lost. I'm sure the Navy will get things straightened out, but some heads should roll.
And Russia's southern Belgorod region bordering Ukraine recently came under attack from Ukrainian artillery fire, authorities said, hours after at least one nighttime blast rocked a Russian city in a region next to the annexed Crimea Peninsula. The Kremlin's forces, meanwhile, struck a clinic in Dnipro in central Ukraine, killing one person and wounding 16, including two children. Also, a Russian S-300 missile hit a dam in Ukraine's eastern Donetsk province, placing nearby settlements under threat of severe flooding. The Belgorod town of Graviron, some 4.5 miles from the Ukrainian border, was under fire for several hours, with four houses, a store, a car, a gas pipeline, and a power line damaged. The Belgorod region was the target of one of the most serious cross-border attacks from Ukraine since the war began 15 months ago. Details of the raids were murky, as Russia blamed the Ukrainian armed forces, but two Russian groups said they were involved, with the aim of bringing down Russian President Putin. Drone attacks against Russian regions on the border with Ukraine have been a regular occurrence since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February last year, with attacks stepping up last month. Earlier this month, an oil refinery in Krasnodar was attacked by drones on two consecutive days. In another apparent incident of Kiev's forces harassing Russia, Ukraine's defense ministry published footage that appeared to show an unmanned drone boat attacking Russia's Ivan Kurz reconnaissance ship in the Black Sea.
I've been saying this for some time now. We need to support Ukraine, but we also need to push hard for negotiations to end the war. I wonder if we're doing that. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved in getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel and we'll enjoy some Marine wisdom. Then we'll talk with Ambassador John Bolton. At ease, troops, take a break.
Hello, HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. Always keep your guns locked up and safe from unauthorized users, especially your children. Inside your home, you should be able to get to your gun within 5 seconds of sensing danger. To accomplish this, stage a secure and loaded firearm on each level of your home. Above all else, never leave loaded guns unattended where children can gain access. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the Front Lines of Freedom all across America on our 16th anniversary show. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. The theme of today's show is the founding and future of Front Lines of Freedom. We've been through some crazy things in the last 16 years. My focus now is on the huge challenges our nation is facing. The challenges are many and will continue to be very impactful on the lives of all Americans, and very much so on our military. Let's start with a recently released Durham report. It shows incredibly biased and unprofessional and illegal activity on the part of many in government, especially the FBI. Consider this. Several FBI agents and British intelligence officers were dumbfounded by the decision made by the FBI brass to begin an investigation of the Trump campaign aides for supposed collusion with Russia in 2016. Early on, UK intel folks pointed out that the justification for opening the probe was flimsy. Later, they saw its continuation as fruitless, and ultimately the UK folks refused FBI requests for assistance. Bottom line, there was zero evidence that Trump or his campaign had anything to do with the Russians, and to quote Senator Chuck Grassley, the baseless and politically motivated Russia collusion lie robbed the American people of 3 years and tens of millions of taxpayer dollars, end quote. The FBI and the Department of Justice have shown zero regrets about their terrible activities, so why should we not expect this to happen again and again? The senior people in the FBI and the Department of Justice need to be charged criminally for these actions. That will certainly set the right precedent should any future leaders be so tempted. What we have now is typical of dictatorships. Then there's the invasion across our southern border, which is, to a lesser degree, happening on our northern border. We're a nation of laws. We have laws providing ways for foreigners to enter our nation or to become a citizen. These are all being ignored. And what is all this doing to our nation? We have millions of people now in our nation who, as far as we know, have no skills useful to us, may not be healthy, don't speak our language, know nothing of our culture, may have brought in drugs, and who are in no way contributing to our economy. They're ending up in cities that have to find ways to feed and house these people, maybe forever. They're costing us money that we don't have, and some are certainly contributing to lawlessness in our communities. I mean, they did enter our nation illegally, and they know that it worked. Whatever else they are, they're not proud Americans who would want to serve in our military and, if necessary, give their lives for this nation. Oh, and our nation is beyond broke. We're borrowing money from all over the world, including China, and a lot of our budget each year is paying back the interest on these loans. Yes, we're helping fund China's military growth that way. So how bad is it? Well, the total national debt acquired over about 200 years in 2010 was about $10 trillion. The total U.S. federal government debt breached the $30 trillion mark for the first time in February 2022, and as of February 2023, the total federal debt was $31.5 trillion. In December of 2021, debt held by the public was estimated as 96% of the GDP. About one-third of this public debt was owned by foreigners, government and private. We have the largest external debt in the world. Oh, and our military is expensive, but it protects us. We have to cut somewhere, but not there. We'd better decide to start cutting soon. And who's going to pay off this? At some point, debt and the interest on the debt crushes the debtor. Since we can't seem to cut back on government spending, we'll just let our kids and grandkids suffer when everything crashes, right? Then there's Russia and Ukraine. The way the war has gone so far, Ukraine is killing two Russians for every one of their troops who's killed. But Russia has a much, much, much bigger population. Ukraine can't keep this up. And we can't afford to keep providing Ukraine with money, weapons, and other resources. It's worthy of note that NATO nations are doing very little to support Ukraine. Okay, Poland's an exception. The largest, wealthiest nation in Western Europe, Germany, is doing very little. And it's those nations that will be at greatest risk if Russia's successful here and wants to keep growing and invading nations. Our goal needs to be to begin negotiations to end the war. Russia does have some real needs here, and of course, so does Ukraine. And we need to get China under control. They've got great strengths and some real weaknesses. We need to know what we'll do when China invades Taiwan. And we need a plan to get Chinese companies out of our country. Oh, I almost forgot about the criminal Biden family. I've heard that a formal investigation has begun, but there's nothing mentioned in the mainstream media. Can we trust the FBI to do this? Stay tuned. Oh, and all the deaths coming as a result of the mandated COVID shots. That's not in the news either, but there's a lot of them. And let's not forget the woke revolution. You know, there are multiple genders that people can pick the one they want. Men can decide to become women and vice versa. And humans born and raised as a male can compete athletically against women. There are so many truly goofy things that are advocated. And most also include a total abandonment of our Judeo-Christian culture and values. Can you pick your pronouns and others can get in trouble for not using the right one? How does that work in the military, especially in combat? Oh, yeah, it includes that our nation was founded on a racist foundation, which is totally false. And even today, if you're white and a male, you're evil. And if you're black, you're a victim. This involves promotions based on gender and color, not ability and demonstrated performance. How do you have an effective military when biological men shower with women? And if women complain, she gets punished? And how do you get any women to join such an outfit? And how do you get combat-oriented and ready to fight if race and gender and pronouns and such crazy topics are what's important to your team and your leadership? We need to get back to our founding values and culture once again and become one nation under God. We certainly don't need to be supporting what the LA Dodgers are doing. Let's get back to God. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some Marine wisdom with co-host Skip Coriel. What do you have to share, Skip?
Lately, it seems, not much good happens in America. Of course, I know that's not true. I work with heroes every day, but nonetheless, something's wrong. Don't believe me? Read the news. Here's a quote from J.R.R. Tolkien. "And some things that should not have been forgotten were lost. History became legend. Legend became myth." I read the news and I agree. Something has been lost. And my gut tells me that it's something very important. And I shudder for my children. Are we losing our humanity, our compassion, our desire to do good? When I was a child, we didn't play video games. We played army and cops and robbers. All kids wanted to be the good guy. It was so innate that we had to force kids to be the bad guy. Today, I see a nation of narcissists who have forgotten nobility and courage, who no longer defend the weak or sacrifice anything greater than themselves. Here's Tolkien again. "The world is changed. I feel it in the water. I feel it in the earth. I smell it in the air. Much that once was is lost, for none now live who remember it." Any society's value is measured by the greatness of its people, and America is losing its greatness. Our greatest generation is slowly leaving us, and soon, none will remember it. Because, you see, greatness isn't genetic. It has to be renewed with each generation. It has to be taught. Society is like a garden, and gardening requires oversight. Teach the young that America is worth saving, that good can always triumph over evil, but only if good is strong and it never gives up. This is the task of our generation, and if we fail, well, let's not fail.
Thank you, Skip. I appreciate you. Straight ahead on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Ambassador John Bolton about national challenges in the past 16 years or those we'll be facing. Then we'll talk with Phil Tower and Josh Breimeyer about the founding of Frontlines of Freedom. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. You're standing tall with the Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for sit-ups. Start with 50, take a break, do another 50, then stand at ease.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show the man who was our very first big-name guest on the show. Ambassador John Bolton was our guest, thanks to our mutual friend Richard Grinnell. And that was during the first summer of the show. And he stayed with us until he became part of President Trump's team. He did join us again a couple of years ago, but I'm delighted he could join us again. Thank you for joining us today, Mr. Ambassador. I appreciate you.
Well, happy to be with you, and happy birthday.
Yes, indeed. You know, I'm not used to this getting older thing. you know, but my baby boy turned 51 2 months ago. How do they get older and we don't?
That's a good question. No answer to that one, I think.
Okay. Well, during the past years, particularly the years 2007, 2016, when you were on three, four times a year, we talked about all kinds of things. And our nation was a different country 16 years ago. And I don't mean that as a compliment, but on the other hand, time does change things. But, you know, 10, 12, 14 years ago, Hamas attacked Israel. Fidel Castro stepped down. Obama won the election. Our economy in, I think, 2010 was the worst since the Great Depression. We had a lot to talk about back then. I mean, it was still a good America, but we had some goofy things going on. I think the biggest thing then to me, and now still is the economy. I mean, particularly when they say that it was the worst economy since the Great Depression. Do you have any recollections of that, since we're both trying to go back there?
Right. Well, I think what happened in the 2008 crisis was pretty severe, no doubt about it. But I think what's happened overall in the economy and really in international affairs is we faced a more complex world in the last 16 years than we faced back when we were just starting the show. And a lot of things that we thought and accurately thought were threats then perhaps have faded or disappeared, but new threats have come into play. And things that we didn't even realize were threats, like China, both economically and politically and militarily, are much more obviously threats today. So I think over the 16 years, really, we saw a number of important victories in the war against terrorism that began before 9/11, but certainly for Americans, we woke up to it on 9/11. Those threats continue today with foreign terrorists pouring back into Afghanistan, but it's a different matrix of threats now and a different series of challenges.
You know, at the time, back then, I thought we were doing a good job in the war against terror in the Middle East and Iraq and Afghanistan. But it turns out, with the benefit of looking back at what happened, if you can't name the enemy and define victory, I think, given today looking back, I'd say, should we commit forces if we can't? If we're not fighting against a uniform force, if we're fighting against tribes, if we can't define what victory looks like. I think we talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, no, I think at the very beginning, we had a pretty clear idea what victory was going to look like. And what happened over a number of years that our mission expanded into what a lot of people call nation building, which honestly, I think you have to leave nation building to the people whose nation it is. We're having a hard enough time in this country nation building, But I don't think that the mistakes that were made after some of the initial decisions really undercut the logic of going in the first place. And in the case of Afghanistan and Iraq, of staying, let's just take them real quick, one at a time. In Afghanistan, we did defeat al-Qaeda. We eliminated the Taliban government. We didn't get Osama bin Laden and a lot of his top aides. And when they were hiding out in Tora Bora, that's a long and separate debate. He got away and we had to wait years to get him. And then we stayed in Afghanistan. The nation building part did not go well. But, you know, we did achieve, I think, the main strategic objective, which was during the entire period of U.S. and NATO involvement in Afghanistan, there were no further terrorist attacks on the soil of the United States emanating from that country. And I know people talk about ending the endless wars. Okay, we just ended it in 2021 in Afghanistan. We all watched what it looked like on television. Didn't make any of us proud, that's for sure. And now those foreign terrorist fighters are coming back into Afghanistan. God forbid that they get organized enough to attack us. The solution in Afghanistan was not perfect, but not being attacked in the United States, I still count as a pretty good result. Iraq, different circumstances, but I'll tell you this, our military did an outstanding job in 2003, overthrew Saddam's government, and we made sure that his plans to have nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons now are in the same grave he's in. After that, again, a lot of mistakes were made, and it's certainly worth debating. But from the point of view of what we wanted to achieve when we went in, we got it. And our mistakes we made after that were not determined from the decision to go in the first place. They were separate and distinct. We've learned a lot of lessons. But getting rid of Saddam Hussein made the world a better place.
Yes, sir. And I really agree with your point that there's a difference between engaging in combat against bad guys and nation building. If nothing else, I hope we have learned that we can't. I think there's a tendency on Americans' part to think everybody loves us and admires us and wants to be like us. And if we just give them a chance, they'll all jump on the train. And that's not true. They're all different people with different standards, particularly tribal nations. Nation building is not something you want our military to be involved in at all, in my opinion. And I think you agree with that.
No, I think that's important. We can help other countries out, and I think we've done good work in places like Germany and Japan. You know, they're now allies of ours after being bitter enemies run by dictatorships in World War II. But fundamentally, whatever we do has to be the people of the country itself that make those decisions.
Yes, sir. One other point that I think we discussed is that one of the things that happened to our military was the decision was made to allow women to go into close combat arms, infantry and armor and that sort of thing. And I think that has sort of led to the beginning of there's no difference between men and women. And I think that was a mistake, but that's where we are now. I'm not sure why that decision was made, but it was political. It bothered the heck out of me and still does. Any thoughts?
Well, you know, there are some things that seem inevitable when you look back on them. But, you know, even in the Israeli army, where women have long had much more significant positions from the time of Israeli independence than they did in the U.S. and other Western armies, there's still distinctions in the roles that men and women have. I think we've still got a lot to learn. But I do agree with you on this. I think the whole notion that our military is a huge pool of citizens who are should be the subjects of social experimentation is a mistake. I think if you go back to George Washington's being made commander in chief of the Continental Army, they took a Virginian and put him in charge of a lot of troops from New England that were surrounding Boston. And the purpose of that decision in picking Washington was we wanted an army that was one nation. We didn't want a lot of separate armies. We didn't want identity politics. We wanted a national American army. And Washington helped create that along with winning the revolution. I think when we lose sight of that and think that the military is just a convenient laboratory experiment, we're not doing the right thing by our service members. We're certainly not doing the right thing by the country.
Yes, sir. That's a good point. And we could probably chase that rabbit, but let's not. We're about out of time for now. This is Colonel Denny Gilliman, Frontlines of Freedom. It's about time to talk about our current and upcoming crises for our nation with Ambassador Bolton, and he's going to stay with us. That's what we'll be doing next. This is Colonel Denny Gilliman, Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, some days. And take a break, but stay in the area. We'll be right back.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care.
We are leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted.
Our key to success?
You. We bring your voice to leaders calling the shots so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity.
Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. This is Colonel Denny Gilliman. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Ambassador John Bolton. Mr. Ambassador, one good thing about our current administration is that there's no shortage of national crises to discuss on this show. What are the major things that we should be addressing on this show going into our 17th year? I think the economy is a big thing from my perspective, but there's a lot of things. From your perspective, what are some of the biggies?
Well, I think on the international scene, probably the most significant development was just a couple months ago when China's leader Xi Jinping met with Vladimir Putin in Moscow. Now, they had already announced that they had a partnership without limits. That was their phrase. But that meeting in Moscow symbolized to me really the end of the post-Cold War era. You know, the Cold War ended when the Soviet Union dissolved, and we've been in this kind of confused period for over 30 years since then. But I think we've entered a new historical era. I think this combination and axis, if you want to call it that, between Russia and China, with China very much the senior partner, not at all like the Sino-Soviet alliance of Cold War days, Russia the junior partner today. They've got their rogue state outriders like Iran and North Korea, Belarus, Venezuela. You know, this is a global threat that we're facing. We see the biggest land war in Europe since World War II. In Ukraine, we see the Chinese threat to Taiwan. We see North Korea and Iran continuing to make progress on their nuclear weapons and ballistic missile programs. I think the world is more dangerous today in more places. In addition to the continuing general threats of proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and terrorism from the Middle East and Afghanistan. So we're confronted with a lot of different threats. I don't think the country really has debated these threats adequately, so we can come to an agreement on what to do. I think may well be the 2024 presidential race is a good time to do it. If you look at the amount of time a president spends on national security issues when he's in the White House, compared to the amount of time presidential candidates spend debating national security, it's a huge difference. A tiny amount of time in presidential debates, a huge amount of the president's time in office. And if we don't sync those up, I think Americans aren't given the opportunity to hear the debate and make the right choices. So that's an opportunity going forward to help us better face all these challenges around the world.
Yes, sir. And one of my big concerns, in addition to what you have just brought up, is that I don't see our military as being combat ready. We're woke. We're good at pronouns. I think the Air Force is going to try to get rid of a significant number of white male pilots so that they can have other races and genders in there. That's not how you win wars, at least during my time in the service and in combat. That wasn't how you won wars. And I see that as driving our military.
Well, you know, I think that's part of what the debate should be about. I mean, to take your point on the economy, though, we need a strong, growing economy. It's perfectly obvious you can't have a the kind of military we need without without a strong economy. But you can't have a strong economy unless we can protect our friends and interests around the world. So the, to me, the two things are opposite sides of the same coin. And I think we've got to face up in a world where we've got enormous challenges and threats. We've got to get the federal budget under control. We've got to get the overall deficit down. We've got to get the national debt down. But at the same time, I think we've got to increase military expenditures fairly significantly, which means even greater cuts in some domestic programs. I don't think that's going to be a huge loss. But, you know, we spend a little bit over 3% of our gross domestic product annually on military affairs. And if you think back just to the Reagan administration, it was at 5-6% or more. So we've got threats today that if you add them all up, really overwhelm the budget we've got. We don't have the capabilities that we need. We've got a wholly inadequate Navy. We've missed opportunities for missile defense in this country. And we can see in the war in Ukraine how rapid the consumption of weapons and ammunition is. I mean, the public reports, for example, say we've provided Ukraine with 40% of our supply of Javelin anti-tank missiles, 40%. And our assembly lines are not prepared to take up that slack and replenish the arsenals and give us what we need in reserve. And that's just the Javelins. Who knows where we are in some of these other even more advanced weapon systems. So we've got a long way to go to catch up here, I think.
Yes, sir. And I don't see us focusing on that. As you pointed out, we can't resupply the Javelins because our industry is not set up for war-type production. It doesn't seem to be setting up for it. There's the money thing. But in addition to all of this, one more factor in all of this is energy independence or energy dependence. I've heard, I hope it's a joke, that they're talking about electric-run tanks. I don't know how much common sense is going on in all of this.
Yeah. Well, that none of that would surprise me, unfortunately. I mean, I think it was kind of summed up a few days after Russia invaded Ukraine. The international climate envoy, John Kerry, said this war in Ukraine is just going to be terrible. Think of all the carbon emissions into the atmosphere. And then he said, but I hope it doesn't mean that we can't keep talking to Vladimir Putin about climate change. I mean, when you ask the military to engage in a lot of these domestic, in effect, social and economic programs, you're undercutting the main mission. And our objective here and the standard we should apply is what do our warfighters need to do the job as effectively and as low a human cost to us as we can? And, you know, if these theories about the non-hydrocarbon fuel sources play out someday, fine, then so be it. But in the meantime, you need oil and gas to keep your tanks moving.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Ambassador John Bolton. Sir, one of the things that I think about the Ukraine-Russia thing, I think we need to be putting pressure on them both to negotiate an end to the war. That I don't see it ending. I see a lot of people dying. I see a lot of crud going on. And I think we need to be, one, we can't afford to keep supporting Ukraine, but even if we could, we need to put pressure on Ukraine's got to give up a little and Russia's got to accept a little bit. And I can't imagine that after over a year of war, they're not ready to talk if somebody will step in and take the leadership.
Well, I think we may see some development here with the expected spring offensive from the Ukrainians. We've been waiting for it for a while and you never know what they're up to necessarily, but maybe they've just been doing shaping operations and that may come. I mean, I think the principle here is that Russia committed an act of unprovoked aggression against Ukraine. And it's true, Ukraine's not in NATO. But I remember back in April of 2008, President Bush recommended bringing Ukraine and Georgia into NATO to get them inside the perimeter. And I think if the French and the Germans had allowed that to happen, this war might not be going on at all now. I think it's very significant that Finland, now a NATO member, Sweden, hopefully will get in soon, abandoning 75 years of neutrality. after Russia's invasion, because they saw quite rightly the only real defense was to be a NATO country, which the Russians have never attacked.
We've got time for one more point. And the point I'd like to bring up is, if Russia gets away with Ukraine, they might very well, under Putin, grab a few more countries. Well, the countries that are at risk are those in Western Europe, and they're the ones that aren't helping Ukraine much. Okay, Poland's an exception, but isn't that goofy?
Well, the Baltic countries, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, they're helping quite a bit. The Brits are doing well. It's France and Germany that are the problem. I think another country to worry about whether Russia succeeds is Taiwan. They're clearly worried that China will draw the wrong lesson if we allow the Russians to achieve their objectives.
Yes, sir. And we could talk about that for quite a while, too. Mr. Ambassador, we're about out of time. How can listeners stay plugged into you, stay in touch with you, follow what you're doing?
Well, I'm still doing my best to help out House and Senate members who believe in a strong U.S. foreign policy at the Foundation for American Security and Freedom, which is FASfreedom.com, and through my political action committee, the John Bolton PAC. So I put up all my op-eds on one of the other websites and explain what we're up to. And I'd welcome hearing from any of your listeners. And I wish you all the best again for at least another more 16 years here.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. I really appreciate your being a part of the team before. I hope we can keep having you on periodically. And thank you for your nonstop service to our nation. God bless you, sir.
Thank you. And you too.
This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour discussing the founding of this show 16 years ago. Then co-host Skip Coriel will interview me. Of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones. Grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud-to-be-an-American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.